That song did the trick there. Once I had a little time to actually concentrate on some of the issues that we had going on here, we were able to get everything squared away. So that, of course, was the DJ Crush remix of the Tetsuya Komuro track, Blue Fantasy. Not an 80s song per se, not a song that goes along with the subject matter of today's show, which is, of course, music from the years 1985 through 1989. That's what we're doing on Radio 1/2 Rewind today. And we'll get back to that in just a little while. It's too bad we had a little problems here, so that'll mean I'll have a little less time to play the music I had planned to play for you here on the show this morning. So I do apologize for that, but we do have a lot of extra time, so you'll end up in the end getting more music than we normally do for these shows. But I figured since we've got it set up right now, we're just going to go ahead and get right into the Japan Pro Baseball update. I'm not going to use any of my normal musical flourishes here or anything like that, because I really haven't had that much time to get this fully set up. But I figured this was as good a time as any to get this on. And since this represents a good opportunity to do this, I wanted to welcome onto the program once again Michael Westbay of JapaneseBaseball.com. Konbanwa to you, Michael.
Hi, konbanwa. Hello, everybody.
Let me just make a little adjustment here, because the volume still seems a little low, so let me bring this up a bit. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
All right, that sounds...
Hello, gozaimasu, everybody.
Michael Westbay, of course, is from JapaneseBaseball.com, a great English-language website out there devoted to the world of Japanese pro baseball. And we've had him on the show a couple of times already to talk a little more generally about the world of Japanese pro baseball. But I'm going to assume that those of you out there who are listening have been keeping up with my updates from week to week, so at least you're passingly familiar with what's going on in the world of Japanese pro baseball right now, because we are pretty much getting ready for the postseason in Japanese pro baseball, and that's what we wanted to talk about this morning with Michael. The Pacific League playoffs are now completely set. They've actually finished playing the regular season games right now. And your words from the last time you were on here proved to be pretty prophetic. You had mentioned that that you just could not imagine a world where the Cebu Lions didn't make it into the Pacific League playoffs, and sure enough, they were able to squeak into that third playoff spot.
Yeah, I just couldn't imagine Cebu in the bottom three in the Pacific League. They just haven't been there for a couple of decades now. being so low, so late in the season, in fact, I think they were in fifth at around the All-Star break. I mean, that was just almost unheard of until this year, since about the 1980s.
Yeah, so but thanks to a real good stretch here late, along with a little collapse by the Oryx Buffaloes, who had been maintaining that third position for a while, allowed them to get in there.
Mm-hmm. And Nippon Ham, too, kind of self-destructed there at the end.
Yeah, because they were certainly coming on strong, too, although they had... It seemed like they had dug themselves into a little deeper hole than Cebu or Oryx, so that when they came up at the end, it still they still weren't even able to catch the Buffaloes for the fourth place spot.
Mm-hmm. They only missed the fourth place spot by half a game.
Right. Though. Yeah, only half a game separated Oryx and the Fighters for that fourth place spot. So once again, like last year, there was a real close battle for that third playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's interesting, and I think I brought this up the last time too, but one of the things that I was interested in was seeing what impact the introduction of interleague play made to the final results of this season, because of course this was the first season in MPB history to actually feature interleague play during the regular season between teams of the Pacific League and the Central League. And what I did was actually separated out the results of simply the games the Pacific League teams played versus each other.
Uh-huh.
And the interesting thing is that if you just look simply at the Pacific League standings, it would actually have been the Fighters that would have made that third playoff spot, and actually would have had a two-game lead over the Lions in fourth place. They actually the Fighters were 50-49-1, just within the Pacific League, but they really didn't do well in that interleague play. If I just look at it here, they actually...
That's interesting, because I was looking at the top teams for how they compared, but I hadn't thought of looking at the bottom three teams.
Yeah, they actually, since the Fighters actually went 12-22-2 versus the Central League, that really hurt them quite a bit. Because the Lions and the Buffaloes played the Central League pretty evenly. Mm-hmm. In fact, Oryx came out with a winning record versus the Central League.
Slightly ahead.
Just slightly ahead. So the Fighters really poor showing against the Central really put them in that hole. And again, if you just look at their performance just within the league, they actually would have made that playoff spot. So I thought that was kind of interesting, because that's really the most drastic difference when you compare, you know, the standings within the league versus the standings including the interleague stuff.
For just the Pacific League.
Well, the Central League, when I did the same thing, really the only thing that's different versus the full standings is simply that Yomiuri would actually be in last place. So Yomiuri's decent performance in the interleague play is actually what's kept them out of the basement of the Central League at this
point.
Well,
didn't Chunichi do extremely poorly in interleague play?
Yes, but they...
15-21.
Yes, they did do quite badly, but they did so well within the league that it maintained their same position. It's just that they'd be a lot closer to the Tigers. Looking at the simple intra-league standings, the Tigers are still on top, but the Dragons are only down by one game as of yesterday's action.
So it would have made the race a lot closer.
Exactly. In other words, they wouldn't have had quite as big a hill that they had to climb there, because they certainly went on a major winning tear there to kind of get them back into things. Just to even get them within striking distance, and then basically the fact they lost some down the final stretch sort of hurt them in terms of keeping up, because they were keeping up with the Tigers there for a while. And then it basically probably, I think, about...
Three-game series at Nagoya Dome really spilled their doom.
Yeah, so... But the fact is that if they didn't have that hole that they sort of dug for themselves, they would have really been... they wouldn't really have been challenged, because it was sort of like they were starting to pull away from the league even that early. Before they hit the interleague series, and then they really sort of went on this big downward spiral once they got into the interleague series, and that allowed the rest of the league to catch up to them. And then Hanshin was able to sort of capitalize on the momentum that they got in the interleague series and really sort of take off at that point. Uh-huh. So, and then Chunichi was able to sort of right the ship and get back on the right track, but by that point the Tigers had already built quite a lead, so It took a major effort just for them to catch up.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's the... but in terms of just the order of the standings, basically the intra-league standings in the Central League and the full standings are pretty much the same, aside from the Carp and the Giants having switched places, so the Carp being in fifth. But the Bay Stars would still be in third, and the Swallows would still be in fourth as of this point. And then in the Pacific League, pretty much, again, everybody's in the same order, except that the Fighters sort of leapfrog the Lions and the Buffaloes into that
couple of spots.
Right. So, but aside from that, everything else is pretty much the same. But that was the most drastic thing, would be that, you know, just looking at the intra-league performances, the Fighters actually would have been the ones to make it into the playoffs. But that's sort of indicative of how close that race was for the number three position for the Pacific League playoffs. Now, this is the second year that the Pacific League has used this playoff format, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Previously, at least for a while, it was basically whoever won the Pacific League regular season versus whoever won the Central League regular season would face off in the Nippon series. But just in the last couple of years, and this has really, I think, worked out well for the Pacific League, this three-team playoff has really generated a lot of extra interest.
Yes, I think so. A lot of people really wrote it off as being, not that good an idea because, well, this year, Cebu finished with the performance under 500. So a lot of people criticize the ability of a team that didn't even have a winning record to be able to have a chance at the Japan series.
Whoa, hello.
And I understand the criticism. Yes?
Okay, hello? Sorry, I think we got a little lag in the line there. So.
Oh, okay. The Cebu Lions are finished the season below 500, and this has been a criticism of the three-team playoff system. How can a team that finished under 500 be worthy of a chance of going to the Japan Series? Last year, I believe that all three teams were over 500, and it was a very exciting race.
Yes, it was. And, yeah, if I remember correctly, but I believe last year it came down to the Fighters and the Chiba Lotte Marines who ended up with the second-place slot for this season. And I believe both of them were basically hovering right at that 500 mark.
500.
Like, I think the Fighters ended up being, like, a half game over the 500 mark. Basically going right into that last game, and I think the Marines ended up like right at 500 or just about there.
They were half a game below. Yeah.
Right. So I knew that was a concern of people about this three-team playoff. Is obviously in a league of six teams. If you have a situation like this where basically two teams sort of ran away from everyone else. You can have that situation arise where that number three team could be coming in below 500. But I think, same as last year, looking at Cebu's performance, versus each team, they're really not that uncompetitive. Let's say they weren't really blown away by any team during the course of the regular season, as opposed to, let's say, SoftBank's performances versus the bottom three really were, very lopsided in favor of the Hawks.
Right.
So, really you had to look at the actual individual performance of the Cebu Lions versus the rest of the league to really see perhaps a truer picture of how they'll potentially perform coming into this playoff, because they're certainly going to be a threat for either the Hawks or the Marines, because while they didn't have a winning record versus either of them, it's not like they got blown out. They were 9-11 versus the Hawks and 8-12 versus the Marines. So they certainly have that possibility, and they came in from the number two slot last year and ended up taking everything. So we'll have to wait and see. Now, the first stage of the Pacific League playoffs starts on the 8th, correct?
Yes, next Saturday.
Okay, so I believe then next week on the show, I'm not sure when the, do you know when the actual time of the games are scheduled? Are these going to be night games or?
I don't have, yes, I do have that with me. 2 o'clock Japan Standard Time on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
The games to being held at Chiba Marine Stadium. And then on Monday the 10th, which is a national holiday here in Japan, sports day, it will be an evening game at 6 o'clock p.m. Japan Standard Time, which would be, I believe, 6 o'clock your time. Is it 12 hours difference?
I think we're at 13 hours difference right now. Since we're under daylight savings time, I think normally it's actually a 14 hour difference, but since we're an hour ahead now,
Up on 8:30 p.m. here.
Right. So, and it's coming up on about 7:30 a.m. here. So,
okay.
So 13 hours ahead.
And I will be broadcasting the games live next weekend on JapaneseBaseball.com if anybody wants to tune into my show instead of yours. Oh no, we're not.
We won't be competing for that. I was actually wondering. So, but yeah, the since the Sunday game is an early game, then
it's at 2 o'clock we won't be.
Right, so it's mutually exclusive. So you can check out
if
Michael.
You're awake at that hour.
You can check him out broadcasting the game actually live with live audio.
1 a.m. your time.
Yeah, so if you're staying up all night or staying up very late, you can check that out and then check out my show after that. You know, basically, you can do both. That's the one thing I was wondering about was what the scheduling of the games actually works. I didn't get a chance to check that out.
All of stage two, which is going to be at Fukuoka Dome, are at 6 p.m.
Okay, so those will all be later games.
Right.
Right. Now, just to explain to people a little bit of how the actual playoffs work here. In the first stage, basically is going to be a three-game playoff.
Right.
And
best two out of three.
Best two out of three. And, basically all games are going to be hosted by the higher-ranked team in all stages, correct?
Exactly.
So the three games for stage one will be hosted by the Marines at Chiba Marine Stadium.
Yes.
And then when we move to the second round, which would be the winner of that series taking on the number one ranked team from the regular season, the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks, that's a five-game series, and all those games would be happening at the Fukuoka Dome.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Those games are going to be the 12th, 13th, and then 15th through 17th.
Okay. Now, because of the way that the season schedules get set up, knowing full well that the Pacific League setting up for these playoff games, they usually start their regular season a week early.
Yes.
Now, what will that mean in terms of Central League play? Is there actually still going to be Central League game regular season games going on during the time
League teams still have quite a number of games to make up. Yokohama, 10 games going into play today, as well as Yakult has 10 games. The Giants, 4 games. Chunichi and Hiroshima both have 6 games, and Hanshin, 4 games. All 6 teams are playing today, so that'll reduce all those numbers by one. Yokohama and Yakult. Wait, let's see. Hanshin, Yokohama, Yakult, and Hiroshima are all outdoor stadiums. Chunichi and the Giants are the only dome stadiums in the Central League.
Right, so there are a number of rainouts that have to be made up. And I know the Pacific League, because of their playoff schedule, basically the way they designed their regular season schedule is they seem to have a lot more slots within the regular season that allow them to make up for their rainouts during the course of the season. Whereas
yes, they were much more aggressive with making up rainouts. I don't know why the Central League does this, and this has bothered me for quite a number of years. But the Central League just plans on having October 3rd through October 17th as makeup time, and they don't make up games aggressively during the season. They continue to have those days off. And whereas the Pacific League, because they have to meet the playoff schedule, they've aggressively made up games the following week, replacing the travel day with makeup games and such.
Mm-hmm.
So I really thought that the Pacific League have things together a lot better than the Central League in terms of makeup games.
Right, they definitely have to be a lot more organized for that, and I think you're right. It's probably simply because they have that kind of deadline rapidly approaching, whereas the Central League sort of views the beginning of the Nippon series as the as their deadline, so to speak, to make up games. So I guess they just figure they have a lot of extra time at the end that they can just sort of throw all the games together.
Mm-hmm.
That they need to make up. Now, all of the Central League games that are currently going on and will be going on for the remainder of the season, though, are merely being played for pride at this point.
Right. Well, also, only first and second place have been decided. Third place and below are all still up in the air.
Right. But what I wanted to drive at here was the fact that it was this past Thursday when the Hanshin Tigers actually drove their magic number against the Dragons to zero and clinched the Central League pennant. So at this point we know everything about the postseason. For this point, we know who the 3 teams are for the Pacific League playoffs. And we know that whichever team emerges from that playoff is going to face off against the Hanshin Tigers in the Nippon series.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I just wanted to sort of get at, is that no teams have a chance now to actually make it into the Japan series at this point.
It's, right.
They're just playing to see how high they can get before the end of the season.
Right, it's the final standings and records. For example, Iwase just broke the single-season save record yesterday.
Ah, okay.
Saving his 46th game of the season. So there's still, the titles and records races going on in the Central League.
Right, and also...
Unfortunately, they're... mostly being just kind of passed by the press, because the press is now focused on Hanshin and the Pacific League playoffs. What the teams are doing to prepare and what kind of strategies they're going to
That use. Is the one thing that's too bad about a team, Central League team clinching so early is that,
yes,
it has kind of reduced whatever remains to be done during the season for the Central League. To sort of a background status while everybody discusses how the postseason is going to work out.
Yes. That is a shame.
Right, because as you mentioned, yeah, there's still a lot to play for. Now, that brought up one thing that I did want to talk about real briefly, because I sort of got this perception as well, and I'm assuming I'm perceiving correctly that that because basically the Pacific League and the Central League are both comprised of six teams, how important is it viewed for teams to be in the top three versus being in the bottom three?
There really isn't anything special other than pride.
Well, right, but I mean, from a pride factor, though, I mean, do a lot of teams sort of view it as if they can make it into the top three would tend to be, a successful campaign, or are pretty much all teams just focused entirely on making the Japan series?
The main goal is the Japan series. For teams that are rebuilding, like Hiroshima, they do state as the goal to finish in the top three. I'm afraid they're well out of contention there.
Right.
But it's like the reforming teams are the ones that generally state that that's their goal. It's to get into the top three. But while they're really wanting to be number one, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no additive incentive or anything to be in the top three, like, or to finish in the bottom half either.
Mm-hmm.
Like draft pick and stuff. The draft is so different here, and it doesn't really give you an advantage to finish last.
Okay.
Like it does in the majors.
Right. You don't get any added bonus of being able to pick from the top tier players available in the draft if you're coming in lower.
Right, because one thing they do in the draft here is multiple teams can choose the same player. In fact, tomorrow is the high school draft, and there are five teams, I believe, in contention for Tsujiuchi, I think, a high schooler who can throw in the 150 kilometer per hour range. That's in the 90s miles per hour.
Okay.
And so just because Hiroshima is in last place and gets the first draft position does not necessarily mean that they're guaranteed to get him.
Mm-hmm.
So the five teams who have put in their name for this high schooler are going to draw lots to see who gets to claim him. This is kind of made to favor the Giants, essentially to give them a chance at getting the best talent in Japan.
Mm.
And
right, in other
all
words,
the different things that the Giants do to push things into their advantage are
right. Because in other words,
if
they envision themselves to be in the position that they'd like to be in, which is perennially Central League champions, they don't want to also be the left out of getting the top draft picks at the same time.
Exactly, and that's how everything's geared. So now that they're actually battling it out for last place, they may reconsider giving the last place a little bit more advantage.
Right, right.
But it's highly unlikely.
Okay, now, speaking of rebuilding, I know one of the other topics that you wanted to touch on here is now that we have basically either reached the end of the regular season for the Pacific League, or we're approaching the end of the regular season for the Central League. One of the big things going on right now is managerial changes and issues involved with some of the teams. Because certainly now that the season is over for some of the teams, they're starting to go ahead with personnel changes.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. There are essentially five teams who have announced that they're going to have managerial change next year. In the Pacific League, Oryx and Nakuten And in the Central League, the three bottom teams, Yakult, the Giants, and Hiroshima. Of them, all but Oryx have a name out there. It's still... Rakuten is the only one who is really going forward and pursuing former Nankai Hawks, the predecessors of SoftBank, and before them, Daiei. Let's see. Nankai manager, and then Yakult. He managed for Yakult. And finally, for the Hanshin Tigers, before Hoshino came in and turned things around, is Nomura Kantoku. Nomura is currently a manager and general manager for an industrial league team called Shiducks. And he's planning on not quite giving up his job as general manager of Shiducks, but working two jobs, both Rakuten as their manager and Shiducks as the general manager of the industrial league team. I think that should be interesting.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be a lot of work.
Ogi Kantoku for Oryx, he's stepping down for health reasons. The owner of Oryx really wants him to stay, and they're trying to get him to stay, but he's saying no. This is too much. He's well in his 70s, I believe now.
Mm. Right now he was the manager for the Oryx Blue Wave during Ichiro's run. Is that correct?
He was essentially the manager who brought Ichiro up. Before him was a former Giant. I can't think of his name offhand, but he hated Ichiro. He despised natural talent, I think. And Ichiro just has so much natural talent that it doesn't look like he's working when he actually is.
Mm.
And so this really rubbed the previous manager the wrong way. Whereas Ogi came in, and the first thing he did was bring Ichiro up and change the name on his uniform from Suzuki to Ichiro.
To Ichiro.
To make him stand out.
Mm.
Because he is somebody who stands out. And, of course, that very first season that Ichiro played a full season at the top team was the season he hit 210 hits.
Mm.
The first player in Japanese history to break the 200 hit mark. And now I've read that he's surpassed 200s for 5 straight years in major leagues.
Yeah, I hadn't had a chance to see where I knew he was very close to 200. So that's certainly, I didn't see the official record of that. But,
oh, okay. He may be close or... Yeah.
Right. He's either very, very close or he's...
I thought he only needed one more hit or something.
Yeah, he was, because he only needed like 3 hits, and that was easily a few games ago. So I could certainly see that he would have, he could have gotten over the 200 barrier.
I don't really pay much attention to Major League Baseball, but it's been an interesting
run here because again, I was just even watching the games yesterday. The impact of some of the Japanese players can definitely be seen because basically you have Hideki Matsui, formerly of the Yomiuri Giants, who's really become a standout player for the New York Yankees. He hit a home run yesterday, even though the Yankees already had the lead in that game. But he did hit a home run in that game, which has basically clinched the American League East title for the Yankees and put them in the postseason. And then on the flip side of things, you have the Chicago White Sox, who basically looked like they had this historic collapse. A lot of people were discussing they had such a huge lead over the rest of the American League Central, And then all of a sudden the Cleveland Indians just started creeping up on them. They had like a 15-game lead on them, I think, around the All-Star break. And then, and now they're up by, I think, like three. And a lot of people said, boy, the White Sox really collapsed. But really, if you look at the standings, the White Sox were playing just fine. I mean, they were playing over 500 baseball. It's just that the Cleveland Indians were playing such, you know, just lights out. I think they had like, you know, like an 18-2 stretch or something like that. They just played so well that they played themselves right into it. But yesterday, the White Sox and the Indians were playing, and it really was almost a must-win game for the Indians, but they lost thanks to a three-run home run hit by Tadahito Iguchi. So that basically lost the game for Cleveland, clinched the American League East for the Yankees, and have now put the Indians in a spot where the best that they can do is if they win today and Boston loses today, then they'll go to a playoff, a one-game playoff for the American League wild card slot. But if Boston wins or the Indians lose, then they're out. So, but it was interesting to see Iguchi really factor in there. He's certainly done very well for the White Sox, and I know their manager, Ozzie Guillen, is very, very high on Iguchi and his performance this year. So that's, you know, these players who have been coming over have really been sort of the reason why I wanted to do this on the show here, to hopefully give some people out there some more perspective on these guys and what they've you know, what they've done, because in most cases, because of the way the system works, most of these players that come over from the MPB to the major leagues here, they have to already have had, you know, a 9 or 10 year career in Japan just to qualify to come over here, basically. So they, so these guys have already had a, you know, a lot of history in terms of baseball, and if you understand what's going on in the Japanese pro leagues, you'll get more of an appreciation for what these guys have done up to this point.
Nonetheless, we're talking about Ogie Kanto.
Sorry, got off track there. Thinking about Ichiro, but but yeah, I was thinking that. I mean, certainly the circumstances behind these managerial changes are differently motivated, and I did want to bring up the fact that, you know, in the case of Ogie Kantoku for Oryx, you know, he's more stepping down rather than being forced out.
And, well, he's not really stepping down completely. Oryx is offering him a general manager type position with them, because they do want him to stay. They do value his opinion, his insight, especially to developing players. He's the, you know, like I said, he's the one who brought Ichiro up. He saw the talent there that the previous manager didn't, so he's still going to be there in the capacity. He's not being
right. He'll still be part of he'll still be part of the Oryx organization, just not as the, you know, the manager out on the field.
So Rakuten is getting Nomura Kantoku. Oryx, still I haven't seen any names presented. They're probably not going to have anybody named until October or so. This stepping down by Ogie Kantoku has kind of left them, caught them by surprise a little bit. So they weren't really looking. In the Central League, though, the Giants had a couple of weeks where they were suggesting that maybe it's Hoshino, the senior director for Hanshi now, who had stepped down as manager for the Hanshin Tigers after winning the Japan or going to the Japan Series in 2003. He stepped down for health reasons, as Ogie Kantoku is doing. He had had a mild heart attack during one game during the season. So I don't think that he wants to be a field manager again.
Right.
And I especially don't think he wants to do it for the Giants.
Right. Well, if he had any interest in being a field manager, it probably wouldn't be for the Giants. I know a lot of people didn't give any real credence to this idea that the Giants were going to try and get Hoshino to be their field.
Hoshino has been very outspoken against Giants former owner Watanabe, who is now, what's his title? He came back with some new title after giving up ownership.
Oh,
but
yeah,
everybody knows he's been pulling the strings behind the scenes anyway. But the Giants are kind of like, well, Hoshino doesn't want to do it, so let's bring Hada Kantoku back. Hada was a very popular Giant through the 1980s and early 1990s. I don't really think Hada is the answer to the Giants' problems, but that looks to be the direction they're going.
Okay.
Yakult has been very firm in their desire to have catcher Furuta become the manager. Whether he's a playing manager or just a manager doesn't seem to matter to the owner of Yakult. He wants Furuta in charge on the field.
Right. Now Furuta has certainly done a lot in terms of his running of the players union as well.
Yes, he has.
I know he was sort of the outspoken figure during last season's negotiations, basically during the time when it looked like there were machinations to try and merge a couple of teams together, get the roster of teams down to 10, and then fuse the two leagues together into one league. He was outspokenly
against it, and he was able to rally the players and the public, which is something that's very rare in Japan, to be able to do that sort of thing, and especially within the players' organization itself. There really hasn't been much strong leadership there. And for somebody to be able to stand up to the owners and tell them, we're not going to do what you're telling, or we oppose this, that was almost unheard of until Furuta stood up and did exactly that. So some people see this as a way of getting Furuta out of there. but actually, Yakult's owner has been suggesting this for many years now. This isn't a new thing. Certainly before Furuta became the enigmatic leader of the players' union, this has been the plan. In fact, they were talking about doing this 5 years ago when Wakamatsu Kantoku took over. So this isn't really anything new. It's just Yakult really feels that the time has come. Furuta says that he still has a couple good years in him, so he'd like to continue catching. But he's not going to make an official announcement about this until the end of the Japan series. So we have until the end of October to hear exactly how this is going to come out, but Yakult he's the man. They're not even considering anybody else. Finally, there's Hiroshima. There's only been one name I've heard come up in the Japan press, as well as the English press. I don't normally pay much attention to the English press, because they're always so pro-foreigner. and being pro-foreigner kind of skews your view a little bit. But I've had it confirmed in Shukan Baseball and other Japanese periodicals that Marty Brown is considered to be the favored skipper for Hiroshima next season. Marty Brown played first base in the outfield for the Hiroshima Carp in 1992 through 94. During that time, he played in 257 games, hit 50 home runs, drove in 165 RBIs in 256 at-bats. And currently, he's the manager for the Indians AAA affiliate in Buffalo.
Okay.
So he's got managerial
experience.
Right,
that's what I was going to ask, is whether or not he's had some managerial experience previously.
Yes, he's getting it right now, so... that's one definite plus for him. He's a former Carp, which is another
right.
big plus for him. Both the Japanese press and the English press are saying that his name has come up.
Okay.
I haven't seen any other names for possibly taking over the managerial job for Hiroshima.
Okay, so right now it looks like he's the guy that they want.
He's the leading candidate at the moment. But again, we're not going to know anything until October.
Right, right, right. Once the season's truly over, then we'll really start seeing real movement. Right now, just names are sort of being thrown about right now.
Right.
Nomura
Tadakten is... and Fudita are the only two really sure things right now.
Okay.
Or as sure as they can be.
Right. Now, the one other thing to mention about Hiroshima that I remember seeing is, besides looking at a new manager, and I know this isn't something that's going to happen overnight, but it's been announced that Hiroshima is actually going to get a new stadium. Is that correct?
This is another rumor that's been going around for years, but this time it actually looks like it's going to happen. I still haven't seen the design for it, so until I actually see a model of it, I'm kind of skeptical
as to whether or not that's going to happen.
But they have had this old train yard near Hiroshima Stadium, essentially blocked off for the future Hiroshima Municipal Stadium for a number of years now. I think that it's just been a matter of funding, getting the city to pay for it or something that's been holding it back. But the word seems to be that it's actually going to happen this time. But I don't know. Just like the managers, I really want to see something more before I believe that it's really going to happen.
Right.
It'll probably take about a year and a half, 2 years to build the stadium, so it's not something that they're going to be in next season.
Right, right.
In fact, I believe that the target was 2009.
Right, so we definitely have a few years to go before... we see that even if it's, even if the plans do go through.
Right.
But I just thought it was something worth mentioning since we were talking about Hiroshima there.
Hiroshima was, of course, built right after the war, but it looks like it's in worse shape than Koshien, which was built before the war, and Jingu, which was also built before the war. So
they really need a new stadium.
it's bad. I've heard stories from people who have talked to players who have been there, and I think the only other stadium that had more complaints was the old Nagoya Stadium before they built the dome. So, yeah. They really could use a new stadium.
Well, hopefully we'll look to see if they end up getting one. Once again, I see we've gone very, very long
just
here.
Just a little bit over.
Well, this is usually what happens here, so I kind of expect it. In any event, I just want to thank once again Michael Westbay for coming on the show with us here to lend his... expertise in the realm of MPB, Japanese Pro Baseball.
It's been my pleasure.
Basically, I figure this is, since you're going to be going into your own your own broadcasting here of the some of the postseason action in Japan. Mm-hmm. That's definitely something that everybody here, if they're interested, should check out if they've got the time and the motivation.
You can, well, if you can't tune in live, I do post all of the games, an MP3 of all the games on the site. And I put them all under a public, general commons license.
Okay.
So you can share the files with whoever you like, do whatever you want with them.
Right, and those are just under the, basically if you click on the live button at your site
right.
there, that's where you can find all of this, basically.
There's a link there to the archives.
Okay. As well as, you know, whenever there's an actual game going on live, that's where you can find the stream, right?
Yes. That's the place to find the stream.
Okay. Yeah, so you should definitely check that out. And, of course...
And download them, swap them with people, put them on your iPods, do whatever you like with them.
Definitely. So, and also, of course... you know, I will do my best here on Radio 1/2 to keep you updated on what's going on in the world of pro baseball in Japan as well. But, yeah, I figure this is probably, you know, in terms of this season, you know, this will probably be the last time we'll talk to you during the season. But I hope sometime in the future here you'll come on again to talk some more about the world of Japanese pro baseball.
It'd be my pleasure.
Great. All right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you to Michael Westbay. And it is actually 8 o'clock now on 91.1 FM, WSPN, Saratoga Springs, New York, Radio Skidmore College. This is Radio 1/2 Rewind. This week, our focus is on the music between the years 1985 and 1989, once again, because we went a little long there, we're going to have a little less time to play music here, so I'm going to try to blast through as much as possible, but we are going to be going actually until 10:30 this morning as opposed to 9 a.m. because Chris McGill is not going to be here this week. She will return next week for her show. So Chris McGill fans can look forward to that, but what's going to happen is I'm going to take the first half of her slot, and then Godfrey, who's normally on from noon until 3 playing reggae music, he's going to come in early, so he'll start at 10:30, and then he'll take you through until 3 o'clock. So, but that means we do have 2.5 hours left here for me to get to some music here from 1985 through 1989. And